Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is John Gruber. John, thank you for joining me.
Glad to be here, Scott.
Now, John, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Oh, what do you want me to say? I write a website called Daring Fireball that is largely focused on Apple and maybe design. I have my own podcast called The Talk Show, where I talk about the same crap I write about.
That's true. You often have people who are on The Incomparable on there. So Jason Snell has appeared numerous times. Glenn Fleischman
has appeared. When in doubt, I just pick somebody from The Incomparable.
I've noticed you've never picked me, John. You've never been in that much doubt. Here's a fun fact about you and me, John. We live in the same city. And we almost never see each other. I don't think I've ever actually just run across you in Philadelphia. Just kind of,
you know, I can't remember that ever happening either.
It seems odd.
It does seem odd.
But I guess I'm a shut-in largely, so that explains that.
I'm a shut-in completely.
So the chances of us ever meeting are very slim.
I think the most likely would be at a steakhouse some Friday or Saturday night.
That probably is true, yes. Although right. my wife is generally against steakhouses, so
we've had this discussion before, right? She gets seafood. She gets seafood at a steakhouse.
Oh, man. One time we went to, on your recommendation, we went to, what's that place on Chestnut?
Del Frisco's.
Yes.
Del Frisco's.
Yes, and I think I told you this. And I ordered, obviously, a steak because you're at a steakhouse. One of my rules in life is go to a restaurant that has a food in the name of the restaurant or the type of restaurant, that is the food that you order. You go to Waffle House, you get waffles. You go to a steakhouse, you get a steak. And my wife ordered the duck. And I was like, what?
Love that story.
Why are you ordering duck? And it wasn't good. It was not good. My steak was delicious. Her duck was poorly prepared. And duck is one of those things you have to get right or it's just awful.
I feel terrible because I did recommend it, but
I thought it was good.
Right.
it was her own fault, really. When we go to Barclay Prime, she also does not order steak. I don't understand it.
What does she get there? I don't even know. I've been there. I don't go there anywhere near as often as I go to Del Frisco's, but I do. Barclay Prime is excellent. It is an amazing restaurant. I don't even remember anything on their menu that's not steak.
They do. They have a seafood section once again. And she always orders like fish or something. Okay. I will say if you're in Philadelphia. I know we're supposed to be talking about Star Trek, but John and I have a shared love of steak. If you're in Philadelphia and you end up in Barclay Prime, you should get the scallop appetizer and then order a steak, for goodness sake.
And with your steak, you should get the tater tots.
Oh, man, those tater tots are so good. You wouldn't think.
I would say this. You might think I feel a little silly. I'm in an expensive, fancy steakhouse. I shouldn't get tater tots. That's for kids. No, no, no. Get the tater tots. And the waiter, when you order the tater tots, the waiter will nod to let you know you've made the right choice.
Because you have. And all the choices that have led up to this in your life have been the right choices because you're about to have the best tater tots you've ever had in your life. speaking of tater tots, I don't even know how we got onto this, but let's pivot to Star Trek talk. Now, I think that people know many things about you. You're a public figure. People know that you like Apple. You're interested in the details of life, I think, and you like Star Wars. It's pretty clear. You have said on multiple occasions that you like Star Wars. The things I know about you that in pop culture that you like: Star Wars, Kubrick films,
James Bond.
James Bond, yes, and that's really that's the list that I know.
Yeah. For me, now, Star Wars was like I was born in 1973, so I was four when the first one came out. For me and my friends, Star Wars was like religion. That was like what the Catholic Church was to my dad growing up in the 40s, you know, going to Catholic school. Like, we just submersed ourselves in the Star Wars universe. And I knew I knew the names of all the weird guys in the cantina. I mean, why would I know that? It's crazy. But that was what I loved. And then you want to know, what do I think about Star Trek? Here's my Star Trek history. I have seen all the movies. I have casually watched the classic, the original series. I don't know that I've seen all episodes. But at some point in my life, growing up, they were on reruns and I watched them. But when I was in high school, The Next Generation was in its first run. And me and my friends were enormous fans of it. So I watched Star Trek The Next Generation religiously in the late 80s, early 90s. I knew. I can tell you exactly when it was on. It was on Saturdays at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. on Fox 29 here in Philadelphia.
And it was, I grew up in New York, and it was on Saturdays at 7 p.m. on WPIX Channel 11 in New York.
Ah, oh, PIX 11. The Yankees are on PIX 11 once a week.
Yes, indeed. I don't like baseball, so I never watched. But right. I have so
After Generation, I tried watching Deep Space Nine a little bit and just never really got into it. And then I watched, I think, two episodes of Star Trek Voyager. I watched, like, the pilot and didn't like it. And then somehow, I don't know how I knew, I don't know how this information became available to me, but I somehow became aware that Q was going to be a special guest on an episode of Voyager. And so I watched that episode.
Oh, and the previous episode of Random Trek, if people are listening to this in order, I talked to Max Temkin about a Voyager episode that was actually the sequel to the first Q episode. And the first Q episode I spoke to Merlin Mann about. So it's all part of the great continuum, I guess. Sadly, I don't think the Q episode of Voyager is all that good, but...
yeah, I don't remember it being very good. I remember it reinforcing my belief that this is not a good show to watch.
It gets better in later seasons, Voyager, but as with many Star Trek. So Next Generation is your Star Trek, if you would have a Star Trek, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, without any question.
So who's your favorite character on The Next Generation, if you had to pick one? Because now you do, because I just asked you.
I guess Picard.
Yes, good choice. Now, what about Picard? Do you find appealing as a character?
He just always seemed cool as shit. I mean, I don't know if I can say that on your show, but I thought it was such an interesting ensemble, and in hindsight, it really is. Where Riker is clearly more of a Kirk type character, right? Mm-hmm. Right out of central casting, he's the guy, you know, he's the right age, he's the right size, he's the guy who should be the, you know, again, it's a stereotype that the captain is going to be the big, tall, handsome 44-year-old white guy. But that's, you know, that's who he is. That's his character on the show. And I think it's so fascinating that he's second in command to a guy who's older, a lot older and wiser, and doesn't really have that let's go in fist first attitude.
Right. That's totally against what Picard does. He wants to talk first. Let's sort this out.
He truly is a thoughtful character. I mean, in hindsight, thinking about the show, it's, to me, an incredibly well-written show. And that the characters have strong personalities, but they are often very thoughtful.
Yes, and they have – and I think one of the things that I love the most about Star Trek is, in fact, the characters and the interplay between the characters. So I think that, you know, the setting is almost irrelevant. You could have these same characters on, like, a police procedural show, and I would watch that. It would be nice if it were in space, but, you know – I'm being picky here. The Next Generation, the characters, I can't even think of a character on The Next Generation that I don't like. I can't say the same for many other incarnations of Star Trek, but.
Yeah. It's almost amazing how many good characters there were in the rotation on Next Generation.
I guess Wesley Crusher might be kind of annoying just because he's a kid, but...
Yeah, and even there, I know he gets a lot of hate from Next Generation watchers, and when I was watching the first run, he was, I guess, my peer. I mean, I don't know if we're exactly the same age, but I believe that I'm within a year or two of what's his name? What's the guy who plays?
Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton's age. So he was, you know, it was easy to hate and be jealous because, you know, here's a kid who's my age who's on Star Trek. I don't know. But I was never a big Wesley Crusher hater. I kind of, you know, I thought he was supposed to be the annoying little nerd. I don't think that was, you know, an accident.
No, and I think he did a good job. So, Will Wheaton, if you're listening, which you're not, good job on being, playing an annoying little nerd. I don't know if you were, in fact, an annoying little nerd. But certainly Wesley Crusher was. And plus, Wesley Crusher, his father died, and it was Captain Picard's fault, and so he's in, you know, it's a tough situation. And his mom and Captain Picard are kind of into each other, but they kind of aren't. There's a little tension. It's not a good situation for anybody. And then he becomes a traveler, and he floats off into a warp bubble, so everybody's happy about that. So the interesting thing, the episode that we're talking about, Half a Life, which is season four, I think? Yes, season four.
episode 22.
Yes, and this is one of those interesting Star Trek episodes where I think, so they have so many episodes a season that they can have an episode where almost none of the main characters do anything.
Right.
Which is interesting. And so this show focuses entirely on two guest stars, basically. Lwaxana Troi, who is Majel Barrett, Gene Roddenberry's wife, and the voice of the computer, which I always find, I mean, obviously it's a show, but I always think it's funny that no one on the show says, gee, Lwaxana, you sound an awful lot like this computer we talk to all the time. But they don't.
I was trying to pay attention to that because I know that fact. I was trying to pay attention during this episode to see if Lwaxana ever talks to the computer, and I don't think she did. It's like even in the elevator, I think maybe one time in the elevator she said what deck she wanted to go to, but the computer didn't have to respond. It just took her to the deck.
Exactly. It is interesting. It's kind of like if the woman who voiced Siri showed up and you didn't. I guess it's kind of like, I don't know if I would even notice. It would be like, I know you from somewhere, but I don't know where I know you from.
Yeah.
But and then, of course, what's his face? Winchester from MASH.
David Ogden Stiers.
There you go. And he's playing, I can't remember his character's name.
Dr. Timpson.
Dr. Wrote this Timpson. Down. There you go. See, look, you're a much better guest than I am a host. And he appears. So this episode really is about them, right? And their relationship that happens very quickly. But, you know, you have to compress for time. And I guess it's unclear how long this episode actually takes, like over what period of time it is, but.
So over at a meta level, it kind of intrigued me that this was the 22nd episode of any season, because it shows this in today's world don't have 20 some episodes, you know, like you get like, what do you get on Game of Thrones? Do they do 10 or do
I think
they
only
eight?
Do 10. Yeah. 10.
10 or 8. And I think in later years, one of my favorite shows of recent years, Mad Men, was only doing 10 episodes a year.
Oh, man. And then they split the season.
Yeah. But it's like, if you take 18 months between halves of a season, guess what? That's two seasons.
Exactly. You know what I mean? I agree.
You could sell them in a box together and call it season 4. But if you're watching contemporaneously, that's two seasons, you know. But it takes a long time to do 10 episodes of a really, really good show. And it occurred to me watching this show at a meta level that that's one of the ways that they were able to make so many episodes, is that while they were presumably making the episodes that sort of revolve around the central cast, they could do something like this and take, you know, 5 minutes of Geordi's time just to film one scene.
Mm-hmm. It's true. They have all the sets. I don't think there anything in this episode is on a set we haven't seen before. Maybe.
No, I don't think so.
They talked to the guy on the planet, and he's just sitting in an office somewhere. So I'm sure they.
And it was a real crummy set.
Well, that's the other thing. I've said this before, but I love the fact that, and I don't know if you watched the HD restored versions of this or not. Probably if you streamed it on Netflix or Amazon, you did.
I did. So it had to be HD restored because the effects were amazing.
Yes. And so I love that they did that. I love that they restored it all. And the problem, although not so much in this episode, for me, at least, I didn't notice it. But you really notice, because when they were doing the filming this, they didn't think when they were making props or things that people were going to see it in super high resolution. So they just kind of threw together stuff. And in some episodes, you could see like handprints on windows. Because
really?
Yes, because they didn't, you know, you didn't see it then. So it gives me a greater appreciation of what set dressers and prop people are doing now when we have like, you know, they're filming in 4K and all that stuff. But anyway, yes, so this episode is interesting because it deals with – it's one of these, you know, Star Trek specialties dealing with a big kind of question, life question, and a society that has come to a very different answer than we do, and how you deal with that. And, of course, the Federation is prime directive is like we can't fiddle with it. And Lwaxana is like, that's not my rule, so I'll do whatever I want. It's interesting. And of course, this is also, for me, an interesting episode to watch because recently my mother died. And so, you know, this is all about death and, you know, when you should go and all of that stuff. So it hit me in a different place than I've obviously seen this episode before, but it wasn't as impactful. But it is more impactful now. But yeah, so we'll just jump into it, right? Lwaxana Troi. What do you think of Lwaxana Troi?
The first thing that occurred to me, these are questions I didn't have when I was a kid watching. I just accepted it. But now it's like, Wait a minute. I know that the Federation in the Next Generation era, famously, it's not quite as military as it was in the original era. You know, that they've got family on the kids, and there's school-age kids on the ship. But still, the whole like, hey, one of the crew's mothers needs a ride.
Well, I don't even know if she needs a ride. She's just like, you were in the neighborhood, so I thought I'd pop in.
Right. It's like, you don't... You know what I mean? Like, if you have a job in an office, your mother can't just come in and hang out for a week.
Loxana Troi is an interesting character because she is a Federation ambassador. So she...
Right. I guess that's the excuse. Is
she
that
just
she's,
pull rank and say, I'm here. Right. Too bad. I'm hanging out. Although... that kind of falls apart because Picard, obviously, famously, also Picard tries to avoid Loxana Troi because Loxana Troi is a woman who knows what she wants and pursues it very enthusiastically. And she wanted Captain Picard for a long time. Right. And it's unclear if she's just he's an attractive man, so I'm sure she would enjoy having a relationship with him. But I think she also enjoys the fact that it just makes him so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that's very clear. I don't think that she's... I don't think she goes to bed at night pining over him. I think she just likes yanking his chain.
Yes, she's a flirt. She likes to flirt with people, yeah. And she can also read your mind. So,
right,
which is an interesting thing about the Beta Zeta, because she calls... They have telepathy, and they're empaths, which I would think I would never want to be in the same room with one of them, but that's just me. And she has much more, she's better at it, right? Cause she's a pure Beta Zeta, I guess. Diana is half Beta Zeta, I think. So she only has the empath and, I guess she can telepathically talk to other Beta Zeta. I don't know how it works. Better not to think about it, I think. So she shows up and Captain Picard, not a big fan of her, but, and what I was saying, so she's an ambassador, right? So she has, and you would think that Beta Zoids, make perfect ambassadors. And so she pops in, and Picard is like, oh, no, we have this guy from this reclusive planet who's coming to help us while we're helping him, because his son is dying, and he wants to save it and all this. Not his son, but the son in
the
his solar system.
The center of his solar system.
That's a better way of saying that. And he's like, oh, we can't, you know, you can't meet him because it's sensitive. It's like a first contact situation, even though we have had contact before, and you might screw it up, is basically what he says. And then you think, well, she's an ambassador. This is what she does, so why? That's a very bad excuse. And also, she completely ignores it and introduces herself anyway. But
and then we get to meet Dr. Timpson, and he's, like you said, from a reclusive planet, a planet that has had very little to do with the rest of the Federation, and the Federation isn't even really familiar with their ways, their mores, whatever you want to say. And yet, in classic Star Trek fashion, they look exactly... exactly like human beings with some sort of birthmark, like a birthmark in the shape of like a wreath.
Yes, around
what Caesar would wear on the skin of their forehead.
Yes,
otherwise,
and around the top of their head too. I think it goes all the way around. But they are exactly spot on humans. It's well, like you were saying, they do a lot of episodes, John. It's expensive to come up with aliens, so every Star Trek alien has this crazy
classic,
forehead, and that's about it.
Trek, right?
They don't have these big budgets that Game of Thrones has. Right. Although I think they did have a lot of. I don't know how much they cost. Probably $1 million or something. I don't know. I'm making that up. Somebody on the internet will correct me. Thank you. And so the first kind of read that we get on Dr. Simonson is he is a no-nonsense kind of business man of science. I need to solve this problem. I love my planet and my society, because they're setting this up for the big payoff, right? And so Loxana Troi is like, well, I know your son is dying. The star in your solar system is dying. He has a daughter, no son. So why don't you just move? Pack up your stuff, everybody leaves, and you don't have to worry about your planet blowing up. And he says, well, it's our planet. We wouldn't have a home. We can't leave our home. It's super important for us. You know nothing of our ways. We like to stay on our planet, which, you know, serves an important point later on when we find out about the resolution.
Right.
Ooh, spooky. And so really, this is, I mean, Star Trek episodes generally have an A and a B plot, and I guess if we had to pick two, the A plot is really the story between Dr. Timison and Loxana. The B plot is Dr. Timison and Data and Geordi trying to figure out if they can
save their star.
Exactly. And so he spent all of his life. He's 59 years old and 4 days shy of his 60th birthday, apparently, which we find out for a very important reason. And so he spent all his life trying to figure out this problem. He thinks he's cracked it. It involves shooting photon torpedoes into the sun. Doesn't really matter why. They do it. It seems
you're missing a point, though. What happened, why he's on the Enterprise, is that they have found another star elsewhere galaxy with the exact same symptoms, or very similar size and very similar symptoms to the whatever nuclear problem is plaguing his system's sun. So they can run his – here's what he thinks they can do to save the sun. Mm-hmm. They can try it out on this other sun that presumably doesn't have any life in the system.
Well, I did think about that for a moment because it is, they're going to an actual star and trying to figure this out. You would think it, and it, spoiler alert, it doesn't go well. No. So you would think this would have huge repercussions. They basically blow up the star. It seems like not something you'd want to do. But once again, if you're going to do it to save your planet, you kind of have to test it out in real world conditions. Right. So it kind of makes sense. And I'm guessing that means his planet doesn't have warp drive. I don't understand.
Well, I don't think I got the feeling that maybe that they obviously have starships, as we see later. But I don't think the Enterprise has like better photon torpedoes and better sensors
and stuff. Yeah, and better engineering staff to help him.
Better engineering staff.
Yeah, because you got Data and Geordi, and they can help, and they do help in one scene. They're kind of helping.
Right. So the gist of it is that his theory is that if you shoot photon torpedoes that are programmed in a certain way into the star at a certain, do it this right way, and it will start a chain reaction that will restore the sun to a healthy level. And at first it looks like it works, and then it goes a little too far, and the whole star blows up. And so the gist of the plot is, he almost had it. He's obviously, it seems like he might be close, but there was something that was slightly off. Here's what I think, though. This is like an enormous plot hole, which is that he may not have saved his star system, but he's created a phenomenal weapon.
I thought I had the exact same thoughts.
Right. Like, Picard should say, let's head straight to Romulus. Load him up.
Captain,
this is one where if Kirk were the captain of the Enterprise, they would be right off to Klingon.
They would destroy many Klingon worlds. I did think that. I was like, whoa, they better never publish this because
they've created a star killer. They've preemptively, taken the plot from the new Star Wars movie.
That is true. And it doesn't take long, too. They shoot in the photon torpedoes, and then maybe like a minute later, the star is exploding. So it's good. But maybe, you can wave this away in head canon by saying those reactions would only work in a very particular set of circumstances, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I did have that exact same thought. It's like, they should be terrified. And nobody he's sad because it didn't work, and everybody else is looking at it as an engineering problem, as opposed to, good Lord, you're kind of witnessing one of the birth of one of the most terrifying weapons in the world. Like, you're Robert Oppenheimer watching the first nuclear bomb go off, and nobody really cares. That's a very different episode than they want to tell, though.
No.
And while this is happening, Loxana Troi is walking around, talking to people. She appears on the bridge for no particular reason, calls Worf Woof, and tries to launch some photon torpedoes herself for no reason. I don't really understand. I guess to show people who perhaps are unfamiliar with her character that she's unbridled by regulations and she does what she wants, which is important once again for the later part of the episode. Let's pause and thank our sponsor for this week. I know you're looking for a way to celebrate 50 years of Star Trek, and you can do that at the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum. That's right. The Intrepid Museum is the first venue in the U.S. to host the Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy experience. This is a 12,000 square foot interactive journey that lets you go through exhibitions that put your skills and knowledge to the test as you enter orientation and visit 9 zones, focusing on special training in language, medicine, engineering, navigation, command, and science. Once you complete that, you'll get your commission And then you can go look around the exhibit, see original costumes and props from the movies and series, and even, OMG, see the shuttlecraft Galileo from the original series, which is on display. This exhibit is open now for a limited engagement, people. It ends October 31st. November 1st, you're out of luck. So get your tickets now, and when you're getting your tickets, use the promo code TREKKIE, T-R-K-K-I-E, and you'll get $5 off. That code is valid for 4 full-priced adult, child, or senior Star Trek tickets only. You can use the promo code online or at the box office to receive the discount. The offer expires October 31st. And you can also have a Star Trek overnight, experience Star Trek After Hours, and watch Star Trek movies under the stars, see the Galileo, visit the Shuttlecraft Enterprise, a real shuttlecraft, and you get to take home a swag bag with Star Trek and Intrepid souvenirs. You can find out more info at intrepidmuseum.org/StarTrekOvernights. The Intrepid Museum is located on Pier 86 West 46th Street and 12th Avenue in New York City. Visit intrepidmuseum.org/StarTrek for tickets and information. Boldly go. So that's the thing that you think, it's a very Star Trek-y problem. You think, well, this whole episode is going to be one of those episodes where they show up, they have to solve this problem, and they solve it, and everybody's happy. But that's not really what this episode is about. It's kind of the hook. But then we pivot because he's sad. And apparently he and Loxana Troi have been having dinner and hanging out. Although it seems weird because we see them later in a scene where they kind of exchange very basic information that you think they would have exchanged if they had dinner several times before, but whatever. We haven't seen those dinners. And so Loxana Troi is like, well, sure, you blew up a sun. Your planet is still in peril, but at least you can try. You're getting close. You could spend a few more years and figure this out. And this is when we find out he does not have a few more years. He has 4 days, apparently, because he has to go home for the resolution, which right. is... everybody on his planet. It's kind of like Logan's Run. Everybody on his planet has to go to Carousel, and then they die. Everybody, right. they at 60 years old, you kill yourself. It's unclear how you die, but...
It's a bit, apparently a centuries-long tradition that mm-hmm. On your 60th birthday, you have a big steak dinner.
Don't order the duck.
A celebration with all of your family and your surviving friends, and then you ceremoniously kill yourself.
Yes. And that, it seems weird. Like, I don't know. Not all of my friends are exactly my same age, but they are all kind of contemporaries of me. So you would think that as you're approaching 60, it gets very depressing because everybody is dying. Yeah. And if you need to have friends that are younger than you, so at least some people will show up to your resolution dinner. and Loxana Troi, of course, is outraged by this. Rightfully so. Although, this is my question, right? This is like a big question that our society is dealing with too, right? When is it okay for people to choose when they die? This is slightly different because society has basically picked 60 years old, seems fairly arbitrary, at the point where, okay, this is when your life is over. You've done some good work. You don't want to decline. Timison says he doesn't want his children to support him because he doesn't want to be an undue burden. And Loxana Troi is outraged by this again. And she's like, well, you did so much for them. They could pay you back a little bit. And he's against that. But it is an interesting philosophical argument. I don't know if they really ever come to, obviously a 40-minute Star Trek episode is not going to solve this problem, but it brings it up.
It's a classic science fiction scenario. Like, what if there was a society where at the age of 60, everybody kills themselves? You know what I mean? Like, it could have been a short story in Isaac Asimov magazine. It could have been an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it really has nothing to do with Star Trek. It's just classic sci-fi short story scenario. And it's one of the reasons that the fact that Next Generation would have several episodes like this every year, it's one of the strengths of the show. You know, like could have been Doctor Who, could have been anything like that, but it's not really, has absolutely nothing to do with the saga of the Star Trek galaxy.
That is true. Although I feel like Star Trek goes to that well more often than other televised sci-fi efforts do. But it is classic. And so Timison is like, I have to go home. I have to kill myself. It's just what we do. And Lox on Troy basically convinces him, well, maybe you still have some time on your hand and you can be the rebel. You can start the revolution. This is silly. You have lots of resources. Your planet is not in the place it was hundreds of years ago when you made this decision. Just because it's a tradition doesn't mean you have to continue it. And Timonson says, you make some strong points. And so he goes to talk to Captain Picard and says, hey, I want some asylum. I don't want to kill myself. I'm so close to solving the problem. If I have a few more years, I feel like I can really crack it. Captain Picard is basically like, okay.
I thought that was that conversation did not ring true to me, because he more or less says to Picard, look, I'm looking for advice. What do you think I should do? And Picard says, I can't tell you what to do. You have to answer this yourself. I think Picard should say, I think that you guys are nuts.
And that's what Captain Kirk would totally say.
You guys are out of your mind. Yeah, come stay with me. Have asylum. And, you know, this is... You guys are crazy.
This is how I sum up Captain Kirk as beaming down to a planet, saying, your society is stupid, and fixing it. And that in this moment, I feel like Captain Picard should be a little more Kirkian.
Because I also thought that the Prime Directive was more about... I could be wrong. I haven't watched regularly for a long time, but I thought the Prime Directive was mostly about like pre-Starfleet societies, that you're not allowed to go down there and you can't diddle with any society that isn't yet at the point where they can do interstellar travel. Right. But then once you can do interstellar travel, it's all fair game.
It's true. And I think that, yeah, they call it pre-warp. You're not supposed to fiddle with pre-warp societies. But it is clear that I forget even what planet he's on. Kalon 3. 2. Right. Not Kalon 3. I don't know. Kalon 3. Don't go there.
Okay. That's another one. Kalon 2. What? Why would they name their own planet Kalon 2?
I think that that's an interesting question. I believe that the Federation is generally good, right? But they are oblivious to natives lingo. So I would like to think that the natives don't even call it Kalon at all. But that's what the Federation has named the star system, and it's the second planet in Kalon. So they call it Kalon too.
That's what Dr. Timson calls it too.
Well, but the universal translator perhaps is translating.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's how I explain that away. Right. And I was trying to see. So Memory Alpha, which is this wiki all about Star Trek stuff, it's the best place to find Star Trek information on the internet, will tell me if Kalon is actually a member of the Federation. It does not list this fact. So I do not know if the Prime Directive applies or not, but Captain Picard clearly does not want to get involved.
I really think that Picard's advice should be simple. Yeah, stay here. Don't go back.
Well, and even when Lox on Troy goes to talk to him before Timison, and she says, we can't let him go. And Captain Picard's like, don't look at me. I just fly this ship. I can't stop him if he wants to leave. And I can't even comment on whether I think it's good or bad. And you're like, come on, Captain Picard. You can totally say this is stupid.
Anyway, Timson is talked into it by Troy. He's like, all right, I'm going to get asylum. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I watched with my son, Jonas. He's 12, and he has never seen Star Trek. He's seen the movies. He's seen many of the movies, but has never seen an episode of Next Generation. He enjoyed it. I tried to explain to him that this is one of the atypical ones, and that usually it's a lot more, you know, adventure with the crew, but that they slip these in. Mm-hmm. What were we talking about? We were
talking about Timison and Asylum, Captain Picard.
He asked me, what is Asylum? It was an interesting, and we got to talk about that. And I said, so this is a little atypical, but it's, you know, the same general principle of Asylum in the real world, like with the refugees from Syria and stuff like that. That if there's, you know, you can't just do it because you want to switch to another country. There has to be some kind of, you know, you have to be suffering at the hands of some kind of injustice in your home country, and then you can get asylum in, say, the United States, or here you could get asylum in the Federation. So that was an interesting conversation.
Yes, and you know, ripped from the headlines, right? So he seeks asylum, Captain Picard gives him asylum, and the minister from the planet, because every planet has a minister, calls up and is like, WTF, we want our doctor back. Captain Picard says, we're not giving him back. And the minister's like, I can't believe you're holding him. And Captain Picard says, well, we're not holding him. We are merely abiding by his wishes. And we did not even recommend that he stay here. Captain Picard is like, I have nothing to do with this. Please don't send a report on my permanent record.
That's a good way to put it.
I'm just a messenger, man. And so the planet's unhappy. Well, this minister is unhappy. And apparently the planet's in uproar. So they do what any kind of passive-aggressive government would do, and they send his daughter up to the Enterprise to talk to him. And he chooses to have Lwaxana Troi there with her. In this conversation, his daughter seems not too thrilled to have this random lady there, and she talks about how disappointed she is, and she doesn't understand why he doesn't want to die. It's interesting because, you know, this tradition seems crazy to us, but there are many traditions that people have that seem crazy to other people. But to them, it is just part of life. And, you know, there are some good things about kind of knowing when you're going to die. You don't have to, you know, you at 60, you're generally pretty in good health, so you don't have to deal with the indignity of deteriorating health and all that. So there's some upside. I am, to be clear, I'm against the idea, though, but I can understand it. And fun fact for Star Trek fans, that actress who plays Timmison's daughter comes back as Ensign Ro in later episodes.
I was going to say that. I thought she was very, very familiar to me, and I mm-hmm. I googled this and I was like, holy crap, she came back later that same year as a villain character,
as almost a main main cast character. I think they wanted to put her in and it didn't work out. I don't know what the story is there, but so that was
she was very familiar to me, and mm-hmm. I couldn't place it, and then I was like, holy crap, she was in, it was the same show.
And that's another classic Star Trek thing, they recycle actors a lot, and as you said, the aliens don't wear a whole lot of makeup, so it's pretty easy to tell who these actors are. And so Timmison doesn't want to disappoint his daughter, really, and then he finds out that, and I think this may be the biggest turning point, that his planet won't give him access to his data anymore, his scientific data. Right. So even the whole reason he was going to buck with tradition was so that he could save his planet and further his work. But now he's cut off from that, and he can't even do that. And so he gets very upset. He yells at Lwaxana, and then he decides, that's it. I'm going back home, and I'm going to die. And Lwaxana goes with him. To watch, yeah. I guess. I don't really understand how the ceremony works, but it was kind of touching. There's this nice scene with Picard and Timmison, and, you know, Timmison's basically like, thank you for giving me asylum. I am not a revolutionary, it turns out, so I have to go home. Captain Picard's like, well, if you want to wait a moment, I think there's a good reason. Well, Captain Picard's very odd in this episode. Yeah. And then he says, no, we've said our last goodbyes. And then Lwaxana Troi appears, dressed all in black, and says, well, if it's for your loved ones, I am certainly in that party. And so I'm going to go with you, Timmison, and have that steak and watch you die, I guess. The end.
I think that there's a phoniness to the whole concept where I don't think, you know, again, it's coming at it from a human perspective, and they look like humans. So I'm going to say that psychologically, I don't think that they would have a tremendously different psychological mentality. And the fact that he gets talked into abandoning the plan in the first place makes me think that he is looking forward to killing himself about as much as I would. So I just find it so unrealistic that this would ever take hold. And if anything, in our world, the older you get, the more politically strong you are, right? Like, who rules the political class? It's older, you know, most of the people in the, you know, like our Congress are closer to 60 than they are to 30. Like, if a planet ran out of resources and started having to kill people, like, say goodbye to the millennials, my friend.
That's true. It'd be like, hey, there's this new cold brew coffee place you really need to check out. Yeah. And then they would all go, and then they'd never come out.
Right. I mean, it's not going to be the 60-year-old. Trust me.
That is a good point.
You know what I mean? You know what always gets covered in the health insurance? Viagra.
And that's because the people who write those laws
right.
wanted the sweet, sweet Viagra.
But that doesn't mean, right? You know, we're not watching Star Trek for realism. that doesn't mean that it still doesn't make for an interesting what-if scenario. Mm-hmm. And the very best thing I can say about this episode is I honestly had no idea how it was going to turn out. I had no idea at all. And if I would have had to bet, I would bet that he was going to skip out on this somehow and continue his research. So the fact that he went back and decided to go through with it, to me, it was an unexpected ending. And how often does that happen on most shows that you get an ending that you didn't expect? It's exactly why again, this was not to me a great Star Trek The Next Generation episode. It was sort of a throwaway episode. But even so, it had there are elements to it that should, you know, indicated why I liked it so much when it was a first run.
And the writing is pretty clever because they put all of this it's pretty efficient too, right? Because we know almost immediately that Dr. Timmonson, we know his type. He is he's on a mission. He loves his science and his engineering, and that's what his true passion is. And so that feeds into the end where, you know, they bar him from looking at it, and there are two choices you could make there, right? You could either say, "Well, screw you guys. I'm going to go. I have it all in my head, and the Federation will give me resources, and I can, you know, solve some other problem. Or I guess I should go back and die." And you don't know; it's not clear which one he would pick. I think he may have picked the wrong one, but hey.
Yeah, but even so, that's interesting because how often on shows do people end up making the wrong decision in the end? You know, the trope is that everything gets wrapped up neatly at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, and people learn an important lesson.
Yes.
Like, you know, and I found, given the concept of this society, I found his behavior to be, you know, compelling, you know, that it was, I believed it. I don't believe that the society would exist like that, but if the society did, I could believe that Dr. Timmonson would do what he did.
Yes, I believe that the societal norms and pressures are such that if this were to be some society, that it totally is believable in that way. And I also buy Loxana's kind of horrified reaction to it.
Yes.
Captain Picard is weird in this episode.
Yeah, he is weird.
I don't know what's going on with Captain Picard, but
yeah. And you know, you asked me what I thought of Loxana Troi, and overall, I never was a huge fan, but I didn't dislike her either. But I thought what was interesting, obviously, this was written for her. She's the only recurring character who's got a big role in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting was that when she learned the what this guy was going to do and what their society does, she got knocked out of her persona, you know, the persona that she presents as the sort of flighty, do what I want to do. You know, like you described her at the beginning of the episode, like we got to see the real her underneath that persona that she presents.
Yes. And it's interesting, the first, the writer of this episode, this is the first episode he wrote for Next Generation, and so he took as he describes it, a crash course in Loxana Troi to kind of figure out, because he was given the brief, write this episode, and he's like, well, I have to figure out how to write for this character, and he found out, you know, basically she has rank and privilege and she's not afraid to use it, but they kind of have dealt on the surface of Loxana Troi, so he wanted to get into the meat of her character, and I think that this episode is probably one of the best glimpses into the real character of Loxana Troi. There's also there's a Deep Space Nine episode. I think that this is where she meets Odo, and she once again falls kind of in flirt, I'll say, with Odo. they have Odo is not very interested because he's very much a Picardian character. They get stuck in a turbo lift and things happen, and we see her real character shine through again. So I feel like the episodes where she is more than just the surface kind of I am here, I'm the holder of the chalice, the fifth daughter of the house of whatever, you know. Yeah. But we see what really makes her tick, makes her interesting. It's also interesting to see, you know, frankly, an older woman as a main character and someone who obviously is not afraid of her own sexuality.
Absolutely.
That's something you don't see a lot, certainly in 80s and 90s TV. Certainly even now we don't see it all that much. So I say thumbs up to Loxana Troi.
Yeah, I do too. And I would say very progressive in terms of being ahead of its time on exactly that point.
Yes. And Majel Barrett does a great job of performing her. So and I wish that she were the voice of Siri, but she's dead, so she can't be the voice of Siri. Sorry.
Yeah. You know what I would say? I know we got to wrap it up. I know you got the time limit. I'll just throw this word out here. Headstrong. And that is a word that doesn't apply to a lot of, I mean, classically, and especially like sci-fi type stuff, you know, it's the women are there to be rescued and get pulled along. I mean, that's part of what made Princess Leia such a great character in Star Wars, was that there, nobody told her what to do, you know, and Loxana Troi exactly is like that. Like, she's not there waiting for, you know, Dr. Timson to decide this or for Picard to fix it.
No, you know, she's like, I see the problem.
She's the head mofo in charge.
Exactly. And there are many instances in this episode that are sprinkled out, like when she almost launches the photon torpedoes because she wants to see what the thing does. And then O'Brien is in the room, in the transporter room with her and I think Captain Picard. And when he has to leave because they're going to have a conversation, before he leaves, he locks the transporter because he doesn't want Loxana Troi to just transport herself wherever. Right. And so I think these great little moments are fantastic. So overall, what did you think of this episode, John?
Like I said, not a great episode, but I enjoyed it, and I feel like it really, what was good about it really does highlight what's great about Next Generation. I'm glad to have watched it, and it's given me a taste for maybe rewatching the series.
Oh, well, then I consider this a success. And this is not, certainly wouldn't go on my like top 20 episodes, but it was a good episode. So check it out, people. And John, thank you so much for talking to me about it.
Oh, I really had a lot of fun.